Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey guys, I hope you're having a good day. It's the Nerdist Podcast number 390. A couple quick things to tell you about. First of all, Nerdist Channel has partnered with YouTube and a ton of other channels, probably within the sphere of your influence, like Felicia Day and Stan Lee and Machinima and Freddie Wong. And we're creating this thing called Geek Week, which starts August 4th. It is a week of programming, as you might have figured from the title, as it is not called Geek Fortnite, because it is today times. But anyway, we've all created original programming for this week and sort of mashed it together into a juicy pulp. So if you go to any one of our channels or like youtube.com/Nerdist, please click subscribe, then you can find out more information, and you'll start seeing the stuff. It's going to be circulating through that week, so check that out. Also, Talking Bad, the after show for Breaking Bad, which I'm genuinely bummed that show is going away after only 5 seasons, but we're going to try to help take the last 8 episodes out fun and respectfully, and the guests we're booking are insane, so I can't say anything about that yet, but that Breaking Bad comes back Sunday, August 11th at 9 p.m., 8 Central, and then Talking Bad is at 11, so it's an hour after Breaking Bad ends, and that is also August 11th. So there you go, Talking Bad, which will take you into the fall, and then Talking Dead comes back in October. So there you go. That's all the talkings that are coming up. I'd like to thank for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast, Clear History, HBO, which is Larry David's movie. Clear History is, it's John Hamm and Larry David and Bill Hader and Kate Hudson and Michael Keaton, Danny McBride, Eva Mendes. It's directed by Greg Mottola, and it's essentially about a guy that Larry David plays who loses a fortune after an argument with his boss, who is John Hamm, and then he changes identity to escape public humiliation. It's a improv-style shot movie shot around Boston, and that will premiere on August 10th at 9 p.m. That's a Saturday on HBO, so amazing cast, and from what I've seen of it, it looks hilarious. So that's it. Don't miss it. HBO, August 10th, 9 p.m. Thank you to Clear History and HBO for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast, which is our show that we did in Montreal. So there was a little bit of a mini controversy, not really, but it's just that we did the podcast in Montreal, but we were a surprise show, which was a surprise to us. So most of the people who liked the podcast didn't know, we didn't know that that was going to be the case. So we show up to the show thinking like, well, this is going to be a tragic bomb because none of these people are expecting to see like Dave Chappelle or something, and it's us. But in fact, even though a lot of people in the audience didn't know of the podcast, the show went great. Largely, I would have to say, in part to our guest, Jimmy Carr, who is a friggin' genius. And if you're an Anglophile of any type, then you probably know the hilarious Jimmy Carr. So here you go. Here's the Nerdist Podcast live from Montreal, the Just for Laughs Festival at the St. Catherine Theater with Jimmy Carr. He's got a couple R's at the end of his name, so you just want to keep it going.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hello. I'll take this one. We'll put this one here.
Thank you.
Welcome, Surprise Midnight Show.
better
reaction than I thought it would be.
Oh, what a... I'm blown away. I'm surprised just as much as other people that don't know who we are.
This is, well... Ooh, should we take a poll, see who knows who we
are? How many people have heard of the Nerdist Podcast? Okay, that's about 30%.
Better than we thought.
How many people haven't? Why are you sounding so happy? That hurts our feelings.
We're going to win you over with jokes and smiles.
Hey, guys. Hugs.
Yes.
And you got hooks. It. You got
$10
it.
Says we don't?
Don't. Right. Oh, we don't win you over? That is just a bad outlook on life, sir. You're in Canada. Get over it. If you get sick, it's fucking free.
No, everyone gets sick for free. Doesn't cost money to get
you
sick.
You get better for free.
Recovery.
We're at the St. Catherine Theater right outside Rue St. Meth.
Oh.
It's really... Here's how you direct anyone in Montreal. It's near the strip club.
Yeah. There's literally a place across the street that says Pussy Corp Sex Massage.
I got...
A sex massage. I would like a sex massage.
Yeah.
So I want you to fuck me while working on my delts at the same time.
That's my third favorite genre of porn.
Yeah. I got really disappointed when I went in that building and there wasn't any pussy corpse.
There wasn't?
Yeah.
See, because you thought it was going to be a puss.
I really thought, yeah.
You really love Stand By Me and you wanted to see
it. I just wanted to see a dead body.
Let's go. Well.
Yeah, I walked in. Lollipop, lollipop, oh, lolly. What the fuck is up with these tits?
That's what plays in Jonah's head all the time.
On a loop.
This is a fun... This is good. This is going to be fun.
Yeah, we're fine.
So there were, wait. From our point of view, there were a couple of things going on that one might call roadblocks. Number one, no one knew that this was not advertised as a Nerdist show, and we didn't know that, so when we got here...
I hope the person that yelled no was a fan of ours.
Yeah. No, I wish they did. Jesus.
Where's Jay Leno or wherever you guys are?
Oh, is he here?
You seen him? You hear about him?
Have you seen this?
Does a Jay Leno joke work here?
Anyway, we're pitching an American version of the Red Green Show. I don't know if that's going to work.
That's a local ref lost
on
me,
friend. It's a way local ref. Okay.
You don't know the Red Green Show?
It's funny.
Wow.
All right, let me get these thoughts out. So, no one knew that this was a Nerdist podcast, which meant that people today who follow us on Twitter were like, where's our tickets to your show? And we were like, we don't know. We heard it was sold out. Well, technically, our show wasn't sold out. The Midnight Show was sold out. So this is a big surprise to all of us. But I will thank you because so far you guys have been fucking great. So please don't lose that. Okay, second roadblock, our guest. As you can tell, there's an empty seat. He might be, we're not sure. Was supposed to be Jimmy Carr, who's a... I know, exactly.
Wait.
It still might be.
Might not be. Jimmy, right now, we've not been able to locate him. So he might... Some person out on that street might be wearing his skin. We don't know where he is.
No, he went to the Chappelle stand-up show that was happening at probably, I think,
so that'll,
10:30 show.
He'll be here tomorrow.
Yeah, show will be ending next week, yeah. The Chappelle show. But so there's no, right now there's no Jimmy Carr, so it's just us right now, you guys. So I think it might be fun if what we did was
just
kind of...
Are you going to start singing? It would be fun if all of a sudden...
Thought it might be fun to sort of go around, since this is a nice intimate setting, meet some of you guys, find out a little bit about what makes you tick, and we'll sort of do a little bit of a round robin Nerdist podcast guest. Why don't you come on up here for a second, and just we'll find out what your what is your num?
What's up?
What is your name?
My name's Erica.
Erica, what do you do here in Montreal?
She's a teacher.
I am a teacher. That's right.
Are you fucking kidding me?
No, I'm serious.
Boom. Done. Next guest.
She's a... Hang on. She's a science teacher.
And math.
Yeah, and math. She's... don't worry about it, guys. I'm psychic. Couple of wavy lines. No.
Okay.
Thank you.
I believe I said 8 o'clock.
What is your... So how does Matt know all these things about you?
She accosted me on the street today.
I totally did. I chased him down.
you guys have already worked out a bit that we're not even that is totally outside.
Listen, I didn't know what was happening.
Okay, so you teach math and science.
I teach math and science.
And then where do you live?
I live in Ottawa.
You live in Ottawa?
So it's about 2 hours away.
Okay.
Go Ottawa sports team.
Yay!
It's the Senators. It's the Senators.
That's correct.
I hope you get all the points this season to get that VIP trophy.
No.
Now, what is there to do in Ottawa? Because the girlfriend and I might drive there tomorrow, and we're just wondering, is it worth it to go there?
Are you threat?
All right, we've taken a poll from the audience, and they've said...
It's great.
A lot of flowers?
It's a great town. It's very pretty. Lots of great museums, if you...
All right, you know what you're doing now? Here's...
Sorry, you guys know.
You're doing the equivalent of... Well, he's very nice. You should go out with him.
Yeah, that's pretty much...
Is Ottawa me?
He's responsible. No, you're not nice.
It's Ottawa. It's not like we just ask you to describe Winnipeg. It's...
Oh, shit.
That's right. In the winter in Winnipeg, you can throw water outside and it freezes before it hits the ground.
Oh, you can do that here, too.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Fuck, I know what I'm doing all winter.
So what...
It's very green, lots of parks. You can see Parliament. Yeah.
What are the school systems like? If I want to raise a family there, I need to...
Wow, this is really... I'm glad your podcast listeners are going to be thrilled.
They are
going to
enjoy this. All right, listen.
Ottawa's
here's the thing.
Lovely. I live in Ottawa. It's my home. It's great.
We're actually doing a teacher evaluation. There's no podcast.
Shoot.
The midnight show is that
I
we're doing...
I won't swear then.
Teacher evaluation.
I will not swear.
Yeah. What grade do you teach?
High school.
High school?
High school.
What happens when you got a sexy student?
Well, I see. There, you have a wedding ring on.
I do. Yeah. So I kind of do that, and they back away. But I must say that I've embraced my nerd over the last year. I put up a giant Doctor Who Dave Tennant poster in the back of my room.
Nice.
And now I have a whole nerd collective, I think, that they come and they hang out in my room because I've embraced...
Not after hours, right? That's wrong.
So getting fired.
Just give us your name
fired.
And your teacher ID.
It's all right. Just show me your sonic screwdriver.
Your school district.
Yeah.
And Dr. Wah. So what are you going to do? Did you come in for just for laughs?
Just for laughs. And somebody at this table may have told me and my friends to maybe come to the show.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. I tried to stack the deck.
Yeah.
You really did. You stacked the front of the house.
Yeah.
Well, is there anything you want to tell everyone before we let you go in this sort of round robin?
If anybody can think of something awesome to do in Ottawa, please feel free to shout it out.
Now, if I'm not mistaken...
Please feel free to share that with Ottawa. Yeah.
That's true. It's only 2 hours to Montreal.
Two hours is still a shitload of time
now,
in a car.
Not in Canadian distances.
Wait a second.
Are distances longer
I don't
here?
Understand the metric system.
Yeah, I didn't
go.
Know kilometers...
Metric time.
So do people just walk out of their house in Ottawa and go, yeah, and then just walk back in?
Yeah.
Like, that's pretty much it?
Summer's great. We actually just had a giant music festival that wrapped up, and it's about 2 weeks long.
Who was the headliner of the giant Canadian music festival? Please tell me it was the
Rush.
Bare Naked
Rush.
Ladies.
I'm not kidding you.
Rush.
I'm not kidding you.
You got Rush. You got Bare Naked Ladies. You got the Guess Who, and then nobody else plays.
But Neil Peart's still pretty awesome. Yeah. Nice job.
Yeah.
You
awesome.
Guys, are you guys really proud of Rush? Because you should be. No.
No, they're over it.
No.
I think they're over it.
Question wasn't for you, then, was it?
You're going to be next up here, sir. We'd like to interview an American.
Well, thank you very much
for being here.
Thank you for being in our round robin.
There she goes, the first unofficial guest.
Can we
the Nerdist Podcast waiting for Jimmy Carr.
Can we find out what this American guy's doing here?
What are you doing?
Come on up, sir.
What is your
come
name?
On America. We'll get to you.
Get in the hot seat. We're talking topics.
What is your name, sir?
Chad.
Chad.
Of course it is.
Where are you from?
My name's Chad Whiteman.
Chad Eccleston, it's the same thing.
Eccleston.
Just as white.
Chad,
Eccleston.
You want to go to the Dave Matthews Band concert with me? I feel like that's something Chad would do.
No, stop smacking on the microphone.
Thanks for being a guest.
What's that?
Chad, what is your tale? Where are you from?
I'm from Vermont.
You're from Vermont?
Yes.
Montpelier,
you know Vermont's a state, right?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I go to sometimes I went to vacation a couple years, like a long time ago when I was a kid, and I was in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and I told people... It's not part of America. I told people that I'm from Vermont. They said, "Oh, what state is that in?" That didn't happen once. That happened several times. And I know it's South Carolina, but like it's still, it's part of America.
Do you know Rye?
Cool story, bro.
Do you know Rye?
Oh, Chad. Don't let Jonah and the back half of the audience deter you from telling your stories.
Don't worry.
I'm sorry.
It's all good.
Are you familiar with Ryegate, Vermont?
Is that Rye, Vermont? Rye, that's not
no?
a town.
All right. Well, listen, I spent some summers up there. It was a good time.
Yo, you know Ben and Jerry?
What
he's
you,
from there.
Are you familiar with the band Fish?
What do you do in Vermont?
Real estate.
You do real estate in Vermont.
So you just sell hundreds of acres of land at a time?
To New Jersey people, yeah, who have never
I understand.
Been
and they never develop it, right?
Yeah, it's
fucking Jersey.
Yeah. Hey, they keep the state financially alive, eh? Nothing else is.
You just said A. You're really blending in here.
Did I say A?
You did.
Yeah.
You did. I was mocking Canadians, sorry.
Whoa.
Oh,
shot fired.
Shit.
Bring it.
You can't.
I love Canada.
Yo, Vermont, you
I
just dropped some
Montreal
shit.
I would live in Montreal if I could. Yeah. I love Montreal. I'd be
you,
here
you
in a heartbeat.
You probably can.
No, it's harder.
Why
than
can't we bring you guys together and create
exactly.
Vermontreal?
Yeah.
Oh, I want to do that.
Thank you.
Did you just think of that?
I did.
Because that's actually my Instagram name, Chad Vermontreal.
Whoa.
Really?
It really is.
Follow
All right.
me on Instagram.
Well, then
Thank
I'm going to take.
For being up
follow
here,
me on
Chad.
Instagram, folks. Just kidding. I don't know where that came from. Sorry. It really is. I love Vermont. The part of the reason why I love living in Vermont is because I can come to Montreal and I still get the rural. In Vermont, and I can get the city in Montreal. It's a great mix.
Do you get bummed out in Montreal because you can't just put a gun under your
arm? I get
arm
bummed
and walk
out
around?
When I'm driving back from Montreal. Shh, I get bummed out.
You can't shush our audience.
I did. I just got.
He just did.
I had something in my mind I really wanted to say. So
oh,
I just,
go yeah go. Chad.
The worst part about driving back from Montreal to Vermont is the women because it's just like it just.
You can't. No matter how many you kill along the way, you never feel satisfied.
No matter how
you just can't fill the hole.
So it just like goes from 9 to 8 to 7 to 5 to Montreal
to
man. I mean to Vermont.
Everything else is just like the cliff has boofed the wind. Walmart, bam, there it is.
Excellent.
Well, thanks for being up here, Chad.
Chad from Montreal. You know,
Chad from Vermont visiting Montreal.
As we are in hour 9 of waiting for Jimmy Carr,
please keep on sending in your money.
That,
you know, guys,
that really aggressive woman in the gray sweater behind you, sir. She wanted to come up.
Okay. Oh, you just bummed out that dude.
No, you'll come up after
I
her.
I met that dude. He's a good dude.
Everyone's going to get a chance.
It's a round robin.
I
Think
swear
of something
to,
funny to
I
say.
I swear to Christ, I would bring up fucking everyone in this room until Jimmy Carr gets
yeah,
here.
Yeah.
I don't give a shit. Yes, please, come on up, ma'am. It is now your turn. Step forward and face the tribunal.
Take the mic.
What is your name?
And what is your creed?
Sarah, New York.
Sarah, New York?
That's a great name.
Yeah.
My creed.
Oh.
What part of New York?
My creed is the band Creed.
With arms wide open. We are sorry about them.
Yeah. Oh, no. It's Canada. They just got Creed.
Like they
it's
just understood. Jimmy Carr, ladies and gentlemen.
Jimmy Carr! That's okay. Oh, wait. Sarah, you didn't tell us anything about yourself.
Stole my show.
Sorry, Jimmy. We are interested in this.
Fight.
Okay, really quick, Sarah. What do you do in New York?
I'm a lawyer.
Okay, great. How's that going?
It's pretty long.
What type of law do you practice?
Intellectual property.
What's your favorite fromage?
Blue cheese! Thank you, Sarah!
Sarah, thank you for being here!
Can I get a couple more drinks for my friend and mine?
Yeah, intellectual property, this is my shit. I'm terribly sorry I'm late.
You may remember our first guest for not being here for the first 15 minutes, ladies and gentlemen, Jimmy Carr!
Yeah. I really am very sorry.
No, it's fine.
I'll tell you what happened. I went to see Dave Chappelle.
Yes.
Like, you wouldn't know it, I think, to see my style of comedy. But he was a big influence on me when I got into comedy. I went to see the show, and it was an hour and 20 minutes before he came on stage.
Yeah. Oh.
We were just watching a DJ for an hour and 20 minutes, and then he came on stage. And that's why I'm late. And because it influenced me, I thought I should turn up late to shit.
Yeah, but we were not as entertaining as DJs.
Waka waka wow.
How did you see any of Dave's set?
I saw like 45 minutes of it.
How was it?
Awesome.
Of course.
So you saw the first 16th of his set.
Yeah.
He goes on a while.
Should we head back over there, you think?
Well, right after this.
Yeah.
He'll still be going on.
Sure. How's the Nerdist? How is everyone?
It's going all right.
It's good, Jimmy. Man. It's good to see you.
What are we talking about?
Oh.
Oh, come on.
Oh, I like him. I want to hear more about intellectual property.
Sarah, be careful when you leave.
Oh, she's not leaving.
Take a...
She's our intellectual property.
It's got slightly aggressively sexual, but in a legal sense.
Oh, that's not where we were going with it?
Oh, no, that's definitely where we were going.
Oh, good.
Yeah. What I love about watching Chappelle is that, you know, there are some people where you kind of watch them as comedians. I'm sure you think about this a lot when you think about comedy, but you see some comics, you go, okay, they're good, their mechanics are good, they're a good comic. Chappelle fucking just is comedy. Just like everything that comes out of his mouth is a well-oiled machine of comedy.
Yeah, it's a weird thing where he's like, the phrase that we would use in the UK, I think, is some people are funny or tell funny jokes, and some people have funny bones.
Yeah. What is it? Oh,
thank you.
We don't need
the stage has just been stormed with.
Thanks very much. I've just been bought drinks.
Oh, thank you.
It's a podcast with a budget.
A little bit.
I say a budget, I mean, look around. This is what comedy would look like if it was illegal.
It really would. This is like a speakeasy for comedy.
Just
basically.
A couple bootleggers.
We tell some dick jokes, a couple flappers come out, everyone fucks each other, and then you go home and straighten up your collars. I've wanted you on the podcast for a really long time. We're all big fans. I'm a huge fan of yours.
And we are all huge fans.
No, we're all huge fans. Yeah,
no, just well, me. Nice. But we were talking because the last time I saw you here at the festival, you were saying, I don't understand why America doesn't do more comedy panel TV shows because they're hugely successful in England and we haven't really hit it yet.
It does strike me as a weird thing that's happened the last couple of years when you come to Montreal. Obviously, the kind of Montreal crowd is different from the rest of North America. They're so comedy savvy. They know exactly what they're watching and what they're into. And I'm amazed how many people, like probably people in the audience this evening, that watch like QI. They watch, you know, my show. Thank you. But it's a weird thing where TV's just changed, where the broadcasters are living in the past. They're broadcasting, and people are narrowcasting. People are finding the stuff that they want on TV kind of from around the world. So they're finding that kind of stuff. And I think inevitably that means it has to come to America because people are enjoying that, and they'll put it on the air. There's a demand for it. It requires no imagination on the part of a network now to do a
Wait,
panel
do we
show.
Have to give up our guns?
No.
Then we're welcoming it. It's great.
Comedy is there's sort of like a stand-up is very big in London right now.
It's bigger than the weird thing is like the middle of this I got very lucky on my career. There's a real it's like people fill stadiums with comedy now. It's insane. It's got kind of it's got enormous. It's bigger than rock and roll.
You play stadiums, huh?
I mean, shut up. No, I don't. I really don't. I play like the biggest room I'll play. This sounds so. Sorry, it's like a I play like 3,000 seats is the most I'll play.
And then that's it. Oh. But that you can't.
If it's a good room, if it's an old room, the thing about British theatres is there was no health and safety when they were built. So there's 3,000 people, and the furthest away you could be is actually pretty close. Well, now when they build theatres, their seats are too comfortable, North Americans are too fat, and they're huge.
To get
3,000 people wheeled in. But that thing of like they're close, and if someone heckles from the back, you can still hear them. You still feel like you're having a conversation with those people. In an arena, you're whispering into the abyss.
Yeah,
it's just this black space, and you're.
I feel like you really need to be like Tim Minchin or someone who has like a musical, like some sort of real performance element,
an actual talent. Should we just say that? I mean, I don't want to diss stand-up comedy. Stand-up comedy is like my favorite thing in the world. But let's face facts. What are jokes? And I'm a joke comedian, quite an old-fashioned comedian, really, in American terms. I tell jokes one after the other. And that's who else tells jokes? Dads in cars. And even then, it's only after like there's been an argument and there's a weird atmosphere. And okay, here's one for you. It's like a joke, and you groan, and it's...
Yeah.
That's
it's
what
a,
jokes are.
It's a
We're
dad
the
joke.
Lowest of the low. I'm one above a juggler in showbiz. And I'm happy to be here, but really, there's street performers with more talent than me.
They're right out there.
God bless them.
Bunch of weird clowns out there.
There are a bunch of weird clowns.
Yeah.
You can tell a lot about a culture by the flavor of potato chip they have and the types of clowns they have.
We had pickled potato chips earlier.
We had pickled potato chips,
yeah,
and some of the clowns
Doritos.
Are very pickled out on the streets right now.
Of course, stand-up comics, we're the natural successors to clowns, and those are some big shoes to fill.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it. I love it.
Dad! Come on,
old?
Dad. Just take us to the mall. Dairy Queen.
Shut up, Dad.
Chris keeps on pinching me.
Shut up, Jonah. You pinched me first.
Shut up. No, I didn't.
Not all clowns have big shoes, Dad. That's really racist.
You're so excellent.
Don't drop us off too close to the mall, Dad.
Oh, what? I mean, I know you're trying to do an argument, but I feel like for the first time I'm in a family. So warm. So inclusive.
So
Jimmy, for a while, I just want to say, was the fastest man in a reasonably priced car on Top Gear, which I was impressed with.
I went back. Thank you very much indeed. I really do like Top Gear a lot. I spend a lot of time with with Jeremy hanging around. And I went back on it recently and tried again. The reason I was the first... You know the show? It's like a car show. Yeah. And only the BBC could make that show. There's no other broadcaster in the world because it's uniquely funded by a license fee. Like, it's funded by taxation. Because if you try to get any channel in America to do that show, they go, you know how much Ford spend on advertising?
Right.
We cannot do that.
Yeah.
So it's like you can only do it in that one kind of... that one space. And so I went on the show, and it's watched. It's the biggest watch. It's the most watched TV show in the world. 320 yes. million people watch that show.
Jesus Christ.
It's huge. Because, you know, people like cars everywhere, right?
Sure.
People in Guatemala. I know Doctor Who. Oh, I don't like this. Is that a Ferrari? Let's get involved. That's... But I tried to roll it. So I tried to roll the car because I figured there's a neck brace. When are you going to be in a car with a neck brace on? When are you going to have a roll bar again?
No way.
I've never rolled a car.
That's great.
And I thought if I rolled it, I'll be a legend.
It's true. He's not wrong.
No, if I'd rolled it, you'd be hurt. And when I came in, there's a Robin the car guy.
What kind of car was it?
It's like a reasonably priced.
It was a Chevy. It was a Lissetti? Was it the Lissetti?
The Lissetti, yeah. It's a piece of shit, I think is the. Yeah. Yeah. It's a terrible.
It's an Irish
bit.
Car?
No, it was a. The Chevy. Chevy's
dad!
An American car.
Dad! You're dad! The dad! This whole
why
time!
Your mother left!
Adorable.
I'm your new mom.
So no, I did do that, the racing around the cars. I've done a lot of driving, actually, the last couple of years. It's a weird thing where being on television, for me, feels like the Make-A-Wish Foundation.
Are you well?
As far as I'm aware, I'm fine. But I will tell you my unifying theory of what I think's going on in a moment. But it is like, I got to drive a Formula One car last year on another panel show that we
do. Amazing.
They went, oh yeah, what are we doing on the show this week? We're going to drive Formula One cars around a track. Okay. Yeah, I'll definitely do that. That sounds like a terrific idea. And then literally a week later, the test driver took half her head off in the same car.
Oh, my goodness.
And they just let us out in it and gone, yeah, do what you want, fine.
Oh, my God.
Health and safety-wise, they're all... On that same show, it's called A League of Their Own. It's worth looking up. There's a clip of me in a giant hamster wheel, like a man-size... Because we wanted to do the 100 meters in the studio, but we didn't have enough space.
Like a week earlier, a hamster took half his face off in that wheel. Dad!
What I did, I bust my ankle. I, like, broke my ankle in this thing. It's a really funny clip because you see a man genuinely in pain. To go from the jovial, I'm in a hamster wheel, everyone, this is hilarious, to, hey. Having a little cry. And then I had to suck it up and do the rest of the show.
What is the best way to navigate a British audience? Because it seems to me that a British audience, the second they feel like you're taking yourself too seriously, it's like the weeping angels. They fucking come to life and attack you.
It's a Doctor Who reference.
Yeah. No, I've got you. It's a British show, mate. It's a weird thing. It's much more combative, I think, in the UK. Much more about kind of the bear pit and late night gigs. And I think because everyone does the Edinburgh Festival coming up, and there's a thing there called Late and Live, which is one of these kind of late night gigs, but it's very aggressive and drunken and Scottish. Actually, if I just say aggressive and drunken, I could have just said Scottish. But it's really, and it's people heckling at you and you having to come back and kind of be strong enough for that. And that's what kind of appeals to me. I think a lot of people get into comedy because they're good at being mean to their friends in a funny way.
Right.
The primary
thing. It's like
thing.
Just described us.
Cocks over here.
Yeah. Well, these two guys,
ouch.
I mean.
I'm sorry, it got too real.
I was fine with that.
Apology accepted, friend.
I feel like I'm the guest star on the sitcom. And there's a lot going on here. There's an overarching theme. Are you guys getting on okay?
We're doing fine.
No,
today.
We're fine.
You know, it's every day is a challenge. Some days better than others. Right, guys?
Every day is a challenger.
Is that a space shuttle reference?
Sorry, is
Jesus
it...
Christ.
Sorry, was that? I just. Oh no, there's terrible bad news. There's a hole in the space-time continuum, and it appears to be what 1987 when that reference would have been. Seriously, are you the guy from Quantum Leap?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Ziggy told arrived? Me he was gonna kill.
Sam!
Bloop, bloop, bloop.
Yeah. Ziggy says
you've got to make a Challenger reference or you won't be born.
What? What happened to that show? That was an amazing...
Quantum Leap?
Ran 7 wonderful seasons on NBC and...
Yeah.
Thank you, Scott Bakula.
I don't know. He's not dead. Why are you looking up? He's still alive.
He's fine. He was in Behind the Candelabra, the best movie of the year.
Scott Bakula's not still alive.
No, he is. He was great. He was behind the candelabra just the other day.
Quantum Leap, and he walked away.
No. Oh, he's on the roof.
Well, when you think of the terrible things they remake. I mean, they've remade some terrible shows and made them into movies. And for some reason, they haven't touched that one yet. What's going on?
I don't know, actually. I would be curious to find out if they actually did try at one point remake it.
I have a friend that works in that works in the law, and we could probably get the rights.
There's a girl sitting in the second row who works in intellectual
property.
That's
his friend he was referencing.
I don't think so.
No, that was you.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Hey, Sarah.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Jimmy.
Is there any way that you would be able to get us the rights to Quantum Leap?
Obviously.
Okay, good.
That's all you need to say.
Okay, here's a question for you. How far away from Quantum Leap do we have to get before we can claim it's our idea?
Quantum jump.
Huh?
She just said take it. You're the worst intellectual property lawyer I have ever...
Yeah, or maybe she's the best.
Take it.
Because if we just took it and didn't question it, then maybe no one would notice. And
the guy that owns the rights, the guy that made those 7 series on NBC way back when, is sitting by a pool somewhere. He's not paying attention. If he sees Quantum Leaps coming on TV, he'll think it's his version.
That's not like Stephen Bochco. That's not like Bochco or one of those guys. Or Sir Cannell, Stephen J.
Oh,
Cannell,
I don't know
or Bochco.
Who made Quantum Leap. If
anyone... What do you mean you don't know? You're a nerd. Come on.
I knew
How
it went
you
for
not
7 series, Jimmy. Jesus. I knew what network it aired on. I know everything about Sam's ties. They were awesome.
If you ask
That's
him about
the thing
how
you know about
the reference that one man loved, the
if rest you ask of you,
Jimmy,
yeah.
It only takes one.
He did. He liked ties.
He would be able to give you the schematics of the Enterprise 1701D if you wanted that. Matt, could
all
give
of them.
You...
Yeah, it's 36 decks. The D, if you want to know. I'm sorry, it's 42 decks. 36 is engineering, in case you're wondering.
So how?
There's a huge portion of the middle of it that's just a deuterium tank. That's fuel.
That's crazy.
Crew quarters are mostly on deck 8.
You don't say.
I'll meet you at 10 forward.
But how we fly?
You think it's kind of just the thing that's extraordinary about you knowing that is the perception that many would have that is a waste of intellectual
property.
Most
would have that.
Prowess. You know, you clearly very a good mind for these things. But basically, it's like you did a theology degree. It's just. You know a lot about a made-up thing.
But here's the difference, Jimmy. Here's the difference. Star Trek's set in the future, so it could happen.
In an infinite universe with infinite worlds, it definitely will.
Yeah.
It's bounty,
Jesus,
right?
Not gonna happen. He should have been back, 30 years ago, right?
Your watch counts years?
Yeah, it's an Omega Speedmaster, first watch on the moon.
That's true, isn't it?
The first watch on the moon.
It is.
Wow, it's like a 7-year-old bought it. I bet you've got one of those mattresses that they developed as well. Remember those mattresses
they
had the
expensive.
late night advert to go, yeah, molds to your body. Well, that'll be comfortable when I want to move.
Yeah, it's called the Thermopedic. There's also a Tempur-Pedic. Don't worry about
Thermopedic?
Well, that's the one that cools. It's got the cooling gel in it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
You have a problem with night sweats? No.
Look at me. I have a problem with all sweats. Doesn't matter a time of day. Doesn't matter if it's 40 degrees outside. I will find a way to sweat.
Yeah.
He's currently developing a casket that's waterproof.
Looking into it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it goes inside a vault. Never mind. Don't worry about it. More about you.
What I want to know is, just because people who are familiar with your style, you have really hard, quick jokes that you tell on stage, like actual jokes.
Just because I think it's an insecurity thing. I think it's like, Chappelle this evening was extraordinary to watch. He just swaggered on and started talking when he started talking. He was not in a rush. Whereas I've got that very British thing of going, a couple of things to get through and then we'll get on. Come on now, the times are wasting. I'm sure you've got busy, busy lives.
That's how most children are born in
200 one-liners, let's go.
So you just took the second half of the phrase, carry on.
But that's why. But I think what you do is harder because when you're telling a joke, it's a sink or swim kind of thing. The joke's going to hit or it's not going to hit.
Well, it's a great feedback loop because you either get the laugh on it or you don't. And the thing that I would draw, you know, this festival, I mean, there's great shows here. There's people doing really interesting things. I saw Maria Bamford's show in this room a couple of nights ago. It was extraordinary. It's a brilliant show. But for me, that show was kind of like someone building something out of marble. They're carving this beautiful thing, and one mistake and it's kind of all ruined, and they're creating kind of a journey for you. It's really beautiful. Whereas I'm building with Lego blocks. So it's inherently just easier. I'm building a model just one step at a time. I just need 200 of these jokes. I can throw them together in pretty much any order. We're off. It's a really kind of fun way to work.
Have you ever experimented with the other?
Yeah, I do. I'm doing like a couple of things here where I'm telling kind of a longer, sort of more involved story. I find they have to be, for me though, I can't create those stories. They have to be like a real thing that happened. I was intrigued. Your material the other night. I don't know if people saw you. Did people see your set?
I don't think
night?
These guys saw the Talk of the Fest show. Oh, some of you did. Okay.
But there was a story, without ruining the story, there was a story about you dressing up in...
a Kigurumi animal costume.
Yeah.
Yeah. No!
But dressing up in those costumes. And that struck me that was... Like, as a comic, sometimes you watch someone and you kind of go, I'm pretty sure that's true.
It's totally true.
I'm pretty sure that's a totally true thing,
it's a
not
totally
an
true
invented thing.
Thing. Yeah. Yeah, it is, because I
you are such a nerd. It's
just... It is a totally true thing. You know, when I first started doing comedy, it's just that thing of when you first start doing comedy, maybe it wasn't like this for you, I thought, oh, comedy is this thing, this well that you have to go draw from to write funny things, and there has to be a turn, and there has to... And
I'm
then
I'm still in that place, so don't burst my bubble here.
Where do I
go now? Hang on, I've come on the Nerdist, and I've got a spirit guide.
But you're
good
at
it. I'm stuck there. I'm still there.
You're good at it. You're good at the joke turns, and I found that I wasn't. And so in the last year, I've just been telling stories, which to yourself, you go, oh, that's not funny. That's just a thing that happened to me. But then you realize, like, oh, actually, it's a very organically can be funny because it's a real thing, and there's a truth to it that is funny that you're revealing.
It's an interesting thing, though, when you go and like the division that I make, like the people that play stadiums as opposed to me. I think there's comics that you go to listen to, and there's comics you go to see.
Right.
I think there's a real distinction. I think that's really true of you know, some of the comics just for laughs. There's people that you go and you go, right, he's going to say some funny things and I will laugh, and that's a contractual arrangement. And there's some people you just want to be in their company. And
yeah.
You feel like, and I think actually as you become, you know, better known and do more things and there's more podcasts, people know you better now. So those stories probably become inherently funnier. Just because people, they go, oh, well, that's, I understand what's going on there and I know what he's like and I know, you know, that thing of, you know, the other night when you sort of mentioned Doctor Who, people were going, oh, Jesus, again. It was really funny. It was really funny because they knew there was a contingent in the audience going, oh, gee, will this guy ever stop?
Jesus Christ. Well, do you find that it's, when you're performing in the States, that it's, do you perform in the States that often?
Very rarely. I mean, I occasionally go over and do like a late night TV show, like 5 minutes, because I find it so, like, thrilling that they would have me. It's fine. What? You want me to go and do the Tonight Show? Yes, in a heartbeat. And just you go and do 4 minutes jokes. It just seems the most kind of wonderful.
You know Johnny Carson's gone, right? He's no longer...
I got the memo, yeah.
All right.
How many shows are you on in England right now?
I'm on maybe three. I do a thing called 8 Out of 10 Cats,
out of 10
which is
cats,
the panel show.
10 o'clock live.
10 o'clock live. I do a thing called the Big Fat Quiz of the Year, which we do... So... Weird. How do you know that?
Internet.
You okay.
YouTube, uTorrent.
Your Irish cousins is a better answer. And they, you haven't seen it. You've been. I was told about it. There is a show. They're what? Sorry, from YouTube.
I thought you were making a roundabout joke about the band U2.
Dad.
You're the dad now. Make him stop.
No, it was his joke.
So. You probably don't have a lot of time to go tour overseas.
Well, no, I do like, I do maybe 150 shows a year in the UK every year. And I had to cut down. I used to do 5 a week. I now do 3 a week. You know, occasionally your girlfriend goes, come on. Come on now, call your horses.
no, sweetie, I like you, but you're not 300 strangers that I need validation from.
It's a weird thing, isn't it? I mean, every comic, though, my favorite quote about comedy is, it's that, you know, in a room of 500 people, you're the one person facing the wrong way. That absolutely sums us up, I think.
We're broken, like, in a weird way. It's a weird thing to get up and try to get attention from people.
Why do you need attention? Why do I care how you guys feel? I don't know a lot of people in this room, and yet I really care how you perceive me.
And there's probably a couple of you that are just like the worst people. There are probably a couple of you here that
I've
just...
often thought about that. Like, in my audiences, the amount of people that I've played to now, I must have played to guys that have killed.
Yeah. The odds are...
I absolutely must have.
Yeah.
I'm really happy you gave that murderer a great night.
Yeah. Oh, you know, what a night. A good stabbing and a laugh.
That gave me the energy to kill again.
Yeah. You know what?
I'm doing God's work.
Yeah. You know, I was going to quit my murdering... Then I saw that Jimmy Carr. Oh, shit. I'm going to stab me.
I watched him kill on stage. Now I'm going to go kill Dad.
I feel we've created a monster with the dad reference after jokes.
Yeah.
I feel like this has to end because it's really going to...
That's good. Okay, here's a game. It's called Pass the Dad. And basically, everyone makes a dad joke. And whenever they do, the other three people go, Dad! And then it's someone else's turn to make the dad joke for the next round. So that's how that game works.
Oh, so you're done. So now it goes to Jimmy.
Now it's going to go to Jimmy.
Oh, sure. You're
going to
be the next dad.
Yeah. I also find that that what is politically correct or socially acceptable in England... is a lot looser than, or at least different than what you could get away with over in the States.
Super different, yeah. I mean, it's just different rules, I think, apply. There's stuff about, I remember when I first went to Los Angeles to do gigs and going to the improv and seeing people talking about race in a way that just would not be acceptable in the UK. Just would be, it was, you know, people using, you know, the N-word freely on stage in a way that people would go, well, that can't go on.
Right.
This must be stopped.
There's a lot about America I feel like you would say that about.
But there's a weird thing where it's kind of different. Whereas, you know, cursing and sexual stuff is kind of what we do an awful lot more of that, I think. And that's much more acceptable. The C word we're very comfortable with.
But it sounds good when you say it, though.
Yeah. See you next Tuesday.
Yes.
The polite way of saying the C word.
It is.
There's not many scenarios, though, where you want to say the C word in a polite way.
Yeah. No.
More tea, Vicar? No. Well, you want to see you next Tuesday.
Yeah. see, say it.
What, cunt?
Yeah. See, it sounds great when you say it. Cunt! See, it sounds bad when we say it in America.
That was weird.
You said it very weird.
Yeah. Why?
I just feel like you put more syllables into it.
Yeah,
than
you have to
are.
Say it like we say.
Why are you
normally
critiquing me, you cunt?
Stop being such
again,
a
you
cunt.
Did it, you did it. Weird. Both of you are doing it wrong.
What?
Yeah.
That's how Americans say it.
Nope.
I think let's defer to it. It sounds like you've been called a lot more than us. Come on. Yeah. It felt like, if a guy's yelling something out of a van, it sounds like this.
I know how to say it. It's always preceded by fat. And then it just goes fat cunt. Yeah.
No, you could be a skinny cunt.
Oh, well, not me. That takes years of practice.
I can.
Oh, well, fuck
no,
you.
No, but the rules are different. We're back in the car. Here's one for you. Try and create a nice mood. Let's turn the radio up. It's a weird thing. The rules aren't very different. Like in the UK, the word Oriental would be used. In America, not so much.
Not so much.
I discovered on stage the other night.
Oh.
I didn't know. It wasn't bad.
You
gotta talk about a rug when you use that word.
Yeah, just a rug. Yeah. It has to be an object. You can't describe a human being like that.
It
has to be an object or a salad with mandarin oranges.
Yeah, you could say Oriental chicken salad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But now they've even changed the menu, say Asian chicken salad in some of the.
Oh, well, I'm still going to a racist place, I guess.
Yeah. You're always heading up those racist places.
Racist places?
Yeah, yeah.
Racist Places sounds like a very marketable chocolate bar.
Yeah. It sounds amazing.
Dad!
We're taking you to...
Dad!
We dadded it. Jonah's turn.
See you, Jonah. We've passed the dead. This feels like a British show. Like, what I love about British television is that in American television shows, they're so focused on, well, the show has to have a point. There has to be a reason. And it feels like in British television...
You're insulting British television right now.
No.
I don't think you are. I think you're making the exact point, which is they're all based on parlor games.
Yes.
What used to happen is Downton Abbey was like a real thing. People lived like that for hundreds of years. Okay. And they were in country houses for the weekend, and they were cold and they were damp, and people were bored out of their minds. And they played parlor games. So a lot of those kind of games like charades came out of that world. People found themselves with hundreds of servants taking care of them going, well, what are we going to do? We don't even have to make tea. I'll pretend to be a book. And that tradition of playing those games came out of that, and then we're still doing that now. So there's a lot of, you know, the news quiz or whatever has been going for years. But it's based on that same premise. Or I'm Sorry, I Haven't a Clue is a really funny... You know that game?
No.
I'm Sorry, I Haven't a Clue is a Radio 4 show, which is very good and very beloved, where you've got to speak for a minute without deviating, pausing, or getting off topic.
Oh, wow.
That sounds impossible.
No, it sounds like what we do.
Well, there was a show that I did an American pilot for like 10 or 11 years ago called The People Versus, which basically it was a British show where there was a guy at a desk.
Yeah, called Jerry Sadovitz.
Yes.
Who's one of the greatest close-up magicians in the world.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that.
No, he's a very interesting man, Jerry Sadovitz, and a brilliant comedian. Very kind of, very, very dark. But yeah, he did a show where it was a line of people, and they would come up and chat to him.
They would just talk about anything that they wanted to talk about, and he would listen and engage them, and as soon as he felt like they were done, he would hit a bell and they'd move, and then the next person would come sit down. And we tried to do it in the States, and there was so much like, well, there has to be rounds, and there has to be a structure, and there has to be reasons.
You just described the first 15 minutes of this podcast. Yeah.
I thought we were being original.
I really did.
Yeah, you did.
I thought that had never been done before.
No, it's been done before. But I love the idea that it's just like, well, you do it because it's entertaining and it's fun. There doesn't have to, you don't have to come on and go, this is why we are doing this show.
I remember pitching a show to NBC years ago, and it was a panel show. I said, we could remake our panel show in the States. It's about the news, and it's about statistics, and it's 8 out of 10 cats, and we could do it here.
Yeah, but does some guy leap in time?
Sadly, no. And the guy just went,
I don't get it. I'm being the executive. Go ahead.
But the guy was just kind of obsessed by who's going to win. Who's going to win? So people, they'll just want to win. The comics will want to win.
Yeah.
You go, no, I think the comics will get it. They've just got to be funny. No, they're
not enough.
Win.
No. Not enough.
So who at the end of the series, is there like a playoff? No. What are you talking about?
Jesus. I wonder, what is the general feeling about America right now?
No, don't ask him.
Okay.
That. I don't. Yeah. I'm guessing it's a lot like our feeling towards America.
It's sympathy. It's like a big guy falling down. You know, everyone's like, oh.
It's pretty positive, isn't it? I think generally. I mean, Europe,
is it?
Well, yeah, because Europe's. I mean, Europe's unbelievably. Greece is broken.
Right.
Portugal's closed. we're looking this way. We need a friend in that direction because there's nothing going on.
I was watching Top Gear last week, and they were in... Sorry to bring up Top Gear again.
They went to Spain.
They went to Spain, where they were just running through... They were just driving through the cities that were just vacant. Brand new developments vacant. Then they came upon an airport that closed 5 years ago. It was built 10 years ago. A full international airport where they just drove the runway because it was vacant.
Yeah, you,
the economy is
exactly
broken.
The right point, Europe is Detroit. But you've
it needs a RoboCop.
Yeah, do you want RoboCop? We can send him over. RoboCop is in Detroit. We can move him. He's a robot. He'll go wherever we tell him.
We can move on from the RoboCop thing if you want.
RoboCop. RoboCop's real, right? He's got
I don't quite follow. He
saves Detroit.
Does he save Detroit? I've seen that film. I don't remember the saving bit.
Yeah,
what are you talking about?
Sure,
he shoots people and beats them up.
Yeah, there is some collateral damage, but it's very much in the same way that, you know, Team America World Police save Paris at the beginning of that.
Yeah. No, it's the same. Yeah, but at the end of RoboCop, everyone wakes up and there's gold everywhere, right? I watched a different version.
So your show, 10 O'Clock Live is a live show 4 nights a week, 5 nights a week?
No, not even. Once a week.
Once a week?
Everything's once a week in the UK. No one has ever done... Well, the guy called Graham Norton once did 4 nights a week.
Oh, we're familiar.
And it was, Graham's great. And it was kind of... There aren't enough people in England to fill that show. it would appear. It's just an impossible task. Whereas America has this kind of entertainment industry in New York and Los Angeles where you can kind of make that happen. There's just not enough stuff. So we tend to do weekly cycle shows and not for as long as the States. No one ever does 24 episodes of anything. You tend to do six because it's two guys writing it together. It's not a team of guys.
Well, Bargain Hunt goes for 32 episodes at a time.
You know that written show, Bargain Hunt?
It's very well scripted.
Yeah, that seems real to me. So the actors in it are so...
Well, you see, they get £300 each, an hour to shop.
What I think is really interesting is that, you know, as a comedian, of course, part of your job is to sort of take down big structures, I think.
Is it?
Don't you think? To make fun of? Absolutely not.
No,
You don't think so?
No, I'd have to disagree on that. I think my job is purely to be an entertainer.
No, but on 10 o'clock live, you guys make fun of stuff.
Yeah, I just do the gags at the top. I just do the gags at the top. I just do jokes. I mean, I'm just trying to be funny. I mean, really, that thing about when comedians think, oh, I think my opinion might change a few. I'm going to blow some minds this evening. You're in all kinds of trouble. I think we're entertainers. I think it's that thing of, like, it's just trying to be funny about stuff is the prime directive. And if you can get something across in the meantime, if you happen to agree with something and get behind it, then great. But it's not my modus operandi. I think for some comics, it is. You see some, there's great kind of political comics that have got a real point to make, but it's not my gig, really.
I guess where I'm going with this is that you're a very famous comic in England. Like, people know who you are. And so, as a result, you make the news sometimes, but then you do a news show, and then you still have to deal
Sometimes that can be alarmingly awkward. Yeah. Yeah, you can find yourself occasionally having to make a topical show that night, and you're on the cover of every
paper.
You're
on the cover of every paper. Yeah.
What's an example of that happening?
Don't worry about it, Jonah. There was some stuff.
I had a big thing last year. There was a big tax scandal, and I slightly Wesley sniped it.
No.
Put it in the dictionaries.
You just moved it creatively. Wesley Snipes just didn't bother paying.
Yeah. But then what happened was we're making the show that weekend. It was bad, but it was kind of manageable bad. And then the Prime Minister was at the G20 summit, our Prime Minister, and he broke off from a meeting with Obama to comment on my tax affairs. And when the Prime Minister's breaking off from a meeting with the most important man in the world to go, yeah, Jimmy Carr's a dick. You are in a degree of trouble that you... Yeah, I mean, I can kind of laugh about it now, but oh, for fuck's sake!
I mean, you probably don't think of yourself as a famous comedian guy. You're just a dude in your mind, and then all of a sudden, like, did the Prime Minister just say that me? What the fucking what?
Yeah, it's a very weird thing when you get your BBC News app and you go, oh, I'm the top story. Oh no!
I must have won Wimbledon. Oh shit!
Yeah.
So how do you
call him George? Oh no, that's not me.
So you have to deal with that on your show because you can't skirt it, right?
Yeah, no, you have to. But I think as a comic, you have to deal with the stuff that's going on anyway. So it's, you know, it was fine to deal with, and there was a sense in which it was that show was very much about taking your medicine. I'd link it to the person that did it best, I think, was Hugh Grant. Hugh Grant. When he got caught with Divine Brown, and he went on The Tonight Show, and he said, I've been a very naughty boy.
Yeah.
And he was just kind of, I did that, and then he had to take, everyone, you know, was rude about him, but he just took it, and then he's fine.
He was. Well, he did the Hugh Grant
thing.
You hear
that, Eddie Murphy? That's what you should have done.
Again, the time riff from 1987.
Oh, sorry. Sam just leaped into me. He's gone now. He's in a woman from the 40s.
It was, you know, Hugh basically was the quintessential charming British stammerer. Hugh Grant. Oh, I don't. Oh, I'm so sorry. And American audiences are so charmed by that, and it's so adorable that everyone was like, "Oh, it's fine." And he totally survived it.
I think if I'd been as handsome as Hugh Grant, I would have totally got away with it because I think a lot of people are just mesmerized by, my God, he's an attractive man. Of course he did. Fine.
But it is. But again, just going back to what I was saying earlier, is that as long as a British audience understands that you don't take yourself too seriously, then it seems like they're fine.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think when people... There's a real kind of... with our press as well, the way our media works, it's much more kind of... the tabloid media are much more kind of vociferous in the UK. I mean, they really kind of go for people. And that tallest poppy thing. So occasionally, once every sort of... It used to be about once a year, I would have a joke that went too far and they would get very upset by. So the last time that happened to me was, sorry, this is boring for you.
No, this is great.
But the last time it happened to me was, like, in a big way, was I did a joke about the our young soldiers in Afghanistan and Iraq, and I said it's terrible.
Sorry
these,
about that.
These young men are coming back, you know, the maimed. They're coming back without arms and legs. But on the plus side, our Paralympics team will rule.
That's a great
That's
joke.
That's a good
but
joke.
I did that joke about maybe 3 years ago, and it was on the front page of every paper, and this guy's disgusting, and we should boycott the shows, and we should, you know, we have nothing to do with it. And the troops were fine with it. I wrote the joke in a military hospital with a guy who was a triple amputee. I was just kind of sitting chatting to him, and I went, oh, I'll write that down, it's funny. But then the papers kind of really went for that thing. And sometimes you have to just go, well, there's 30 jokes in my show that they could have done that to.
Sure.
And they picked that one, fine.
And you're
what are you going to do?
There was nothing. You weren't worried at all. Like, I'm going to lose my job. I'm going to lose it.
Yeah, a little bit for that kind of morning. You're kind of a bit. Oh well, this could be the end. But I've had a good run. Fine. But then like I was at an event. It was the GQ Awards in London about last year. So I was presenting it last September, and Sebastian Coe made exactly the same joke, but he made it as a serious point because they had. They had like 30 guys from Help for Heroes, which is the kind of help our forces kind of thing, guys that have been injured, come up on stage to collect an award, and Sebastian Coe went, you know, these guys, thanks to these guys, we're going to be amazing in the Paralympics in the future. And I went, he's nicking my material. It's crazy.
And then in the front page, he's a hero the next time.
Yeah, but I mean, often that's what it is. People take a joke out of context, I think, because they think, because there's observational comedy where people say what they really believe, and then that gets reported on, that's fine. That becomes, you know, your Twitter feed becomes a news story. And then if you just make a joke, people, out of context, it looks, often I see my stuff in print. You know when these lazy reviewers, sometimes you get, not so much in Montreal, but sometimes you get crazy lazy reviewers who just go, I'm just going to repeat what I saw on my, what I did on my summer holidays.
Yeah.
I just tell you the jokes I heard last night. It was a good show. He said this. Okay, you're not adding a lot of value there, but fine. And then you see your joke written down in print and you go, oh, that is a bit rapey. But there's, you know, there's a lot to be said for delivery and context, and you worked up towards that as well. I often feel like a good tour show of mine will have jokes at the end of 2 hours that I could not possibly have said in the first 20 minutes.
Right.
That thing of like your audience kind of, they get into your humor, everyone knows it's a joke.
You're building credit, you're leading them along.
Sure. And then you're spending all that goodwill at the end on a brutal Holocaust joke.
Well, that's you're cashing it all in.
Sure,
right,
why wouldn't you?
And that's why you find that it's harder to do like a 10-minute set where you're like, shit, some of these really need the context of the other jokes around them to sort of.
Yeah, it's a weird thing in Montreal because you're like some of it's too brutal too quick. Yeah. I found that I was doing the Nasty Show here this week, which is a great fun show. It's very cabaret this year. Got great kind of fun acts on. But it's like sometimes you feel like this is too quick to the punch. And you want people to get to know you first. And also, because they don't know me, that point I was making about your humor now and how those stories will become better for people because as they get to know you more, like, I don't have that here. That, like, people don't know me here, whereas when I tour at home, they've seen the other shows.
Do you like that? Do you like coming to a place where you have to kind of almost feel like you're doing an open mic?
Yeah, I mean, it's inconvenient, but yeah, it's a challenge. It's like, why don't you people know me better? Come on. It's really your fault, not mine. The stuff's out there.
What's the dirtiest joke you told on the Nasty Show?
I'm just trying to think. I don't think it's anything too bad. I tried some stuff that didn't work that was too dirty, I think.
Like?
Can we tell jokes?
Yeah, tell. I'm curious.
Okay. I had a thing at the end where I said, you know, is anyone unoffended? Is anyone totally unoffended? You know, because I did 12 minutes. I said, is anyone unoffended? And I went, yeah, I'm totally unoffended by anything you've said. I said, well, I'll try and offend you. And I got chatting to the guy, and he was a young guy. I said, a friend of mine, I'll try and offend you. I said, a friend of mine when I was at school got caught masturbating in the showers. And he went, what? Nothing. I said, it ruined the school trip to Auschwitz.
Ruined.
You're the best dad ever.
That's just a weird...
Dad.
Just a fun, you know, it's just such a simple little brutal thing. But like within the context of a show, like out of nowhere on a podcast, It's Jesus. That guy sounds like he might have something going on, or some prejudice, or something.
We did the Green Room a couple years ago, yeah. Provenza, and it was Eddie Izzard and Judah Friedlander, and you and Tim Minchin and me and Paul Provenza, and you said something that I just told my girlfriend the other day, and I fucking laughed about it again. I don't know if out of context might be weird, but you guys were you and Eddie were talking back and forth, and I said, God, I just want to fuck your accents. Is that weird? And then Tim Minchin goes, don't you want to fuck my accent? And then you immediately go, it sounds like your accent's already been fucked.
That's about right.
It was such a gorgeous moment.
So that was in my first ever Montreal, that was my opening line. You know, I kind of came out and went, you may be having trouble with my accent, but of course, technically, I don't have an accent. This is just how things sound when they're pronounced properly.
He's right.
Fun.
Is there a place where, because, you know, obviously the comedy scene in London must not be that big. It must be kind of small. There can't be that many comics, are there?
No, there's an awful lot now. I mean, it's become a huge thing in the UK. It's become like, because people are playing arenas, there's more clubs, there's more people going out to theatre shows. It's become an option as a night out in a way that it wasn't maybe 10 years ago when I started doing bigger rooms. It wasn't like, now it's like, should we go to the movies or should we go and see a comedian or should we go and eat something? It's like, for a night out, which I think it isn't in many places in North America. Like, when a comic comes to town, it's like a big deal. But now there's tour shows all the time, every night of the week in the major cities.
We had that in the States from about 77 to like 93 was the sweet spot for people just having comedy be an option. Like, this is the thing to do. Is it like that in Canada? Do you guys just think, oh, let's go out and see comedy at all? No, it's not really like that either.
No, we'd rather see a show like this.
But then it died, but there's a little bit of a renaissance, but I don't think there's nothing like... Well, I mean, our country's just so fucking big. I mean,
it's big and it hasn't got the theaters built in the same way.
Take that back! We got theaters!
Take that back. We pretty much threw the War of Independence. I feel we could take it back.
Wait, please do it. We're in some trouble.
We were crazy. We were all worried about the sugar in the East Indies. That was our problem. That's why we threw that War of Independence. Terrible business. We backed the wrong horse, I feel.
I think
we still own America, don't we? The Federal Reserve is privately owned.
No, it's China.
China, pretty much.
I don't think it does. The Federal Reserve is a privately owned company, and I think 60% of America's debt is owed to the Federal Reserve, and that's owned by four European companies and two American companies. So no. I think technically we still own you.
No, I think it's China. God, this guy's smart.
Oh, here's a. So
I'm gonna say it one more time. Most likely China.
What's the?
He's like me with the Enterprise, but it's real facts.
So you haven't done your show since the baby was born, have you?
No, I haven't done. I haven't even kind of really thought about it. But it's George, right? They called it George.
Did they call it George?
I think they called it George.
Real original guys. I pitched for the Windsor, but no one responded to that.
The Windsor.
The Windsor.
Right. I know, and they haven't got back to you. Maybe they just haven't
said,
got the email.
No,
yet.
For the Windsor, FTW. I wanted to be FTW. I wanted to be For the Windsor, and no one responded positively to that at all.
How good would it have been if they called it North?
Oh.
Just if they'd gone, hey, it seems to work for Kanye, North Mountbatten Windsor.
But there are probably really only about five names that you can name like a potential king, right? And it'd be like George would be one of them.
George would be one. I would say... Shaniqua.
Oh, Chad.
We just got Chad. Did
passing
Check out
Chad.
This hanging Chad.
I'm sorry, briefly my mind's gone blank, but what's the king called in Joffrey? They should have called
king
him Joffrey.
King Joffrey.
If they'd called him how good would that have been?
God, that would have been great.
Oh, shit. What's going to go down?
He would have been assassinated.
All right, I'm just going to throw this out here. Next time, King Ralph.
King Ralph.
You're welcome.
Did they, is that the type of thing where, is it, you know, how can you guys make fun of anything there? Or is it like, well, that's a baby.
Yeah.
Is it, oh.
Oh, you can totally make fun of it. I mean, absolutely. You can be as brutal as you want about any of them. They've got a pretty good sense of humor. They're nice. I did the Jubilee last year. I played the Jubilee.
You did?
Wow. Yeah, I got like a call on the Saturday. Someone must have dropped out. I don't know who. But they did a concert. This guy called Gary Barlow, who's like a singer with a pop band, but he's very, you know, incredibly popular man, put on a concert for the Queen. So he went and he wrote a song specifically for the Queen and put on a concert. So it was Elton John and, you know, Paul McCartney and all these kind of
Cliff Richard make it?
Yes, he did.
Nice.
Yes, he was there. He says hi. So...
Yes,
they did a big concert out the front of the palace. So they, you know, put up a stage out the front of the palace, and there was 250,000 people in just there.
Shit.
And then 7 million watching at home. And I had to do, and I don't have a lot of clean stuff. I mean, I couldn't have told that Holocaust joke; it would have been inappropriate. This is my royal story, so I had to do the little bits. And one of the things that I said was, I came on and I was introducing Grace Jones in a hula hoop. Of course, yep. I was. It's
well,
nice work
not?
If you can get it. But it's such a surreal experience. So I had to introduce Grace Jones in a hula hoop, and I said, I said we're all really nervous backstage. So I'm there in front of them, and the Queen and the William and Harry and everyone's there, and Charles. I said, we're all super nervous backstage because we meet the royal family later on. There's a party, and it's, I don't know what the etiquette is. You know, I don't know what you're meant to call each other. And then I looked at the Queen in the eyes and went, just call me Mr. Carr. And then I was at the party later on, like 6 hours later. We're at a party in Buckingham Palace. It's like unbelievable. You're chatting to these people, and there's like, everyone is there. It's like being in a waxwork museum, but everyone's alive. It's
moving, just, animated.
Just an extraordinary experience. And I got a tap on my shoulder. A tap on my shoulder, and I turned around. It was Prince William, and he went, "Mr. Carr." I thought it was a really funny line. I thought it was really he's nailed that.
That's great.
He gets jokes.
So yeah. they're good about it. I mean, you can't. Yeah, I guess at a certain point you would have to be. They would have to just give in to it.
Yeah, I mean, I think they get the idea that, you know, people are going to take the piss out of them, but then they're okay. They live in a castle. Actually, the other funny thing that happened that day was the security thing. So I was going through. So I had to get into Buckingham Palace that morning, and there was security everywhere, and they're worried there was going to be like a terrorist thing. They're always kind of upset about that. You know, maybe if someone wants to ruin the day or protest or whatever. So I went up to the gates at the side of Buckingham Palace to get in. Like, and I had the, like, a pass and stuff. And there was a policeman there, like an armed police officer. There's not many armed police officers in the UK. He's an armed police officer there to protect the Queen, to make sure no one steals our Queen and photocopies ahead to make their own money and stamps. So the guy's there with a gun. And I literally walked up to him and I went, "Oh, I'm here for the concert." And he went, "Are you an Al-Qaeda?" I went, "No." And he went, "Go on then." And that was it. That was the full security check.
Because if you are, you have to tell me. You know that's the rule, right?
Yeah.
He was like such a cool guy.
That's amazing.
That'd be awesome if he's like anyone that comes up. You're not kind of, yes. I mean, no. Ah, damn it.
Or you're a comedian. You're like, isn't it obvious? And then they fucking shoot you. What was the, did you have to go through any sort of, did you have to screen your joke? Did you have to give him your jokes before you did the show?
Yeah, I had to run it past the guy that was producing it and just go. I mean, it was all super, super clean. I mean, there's nothing kind of in that set that was, it was all about, you know, corgis and not double
parking. That's the most adorable set.
You get 40 minutes on corgis.
Yeah. Oh. Well, I did write an awful lot of stuff for it, but then it was just basically they had to change drum kit, so they needed someone to go on and go, "Hey, everyone, how's everyone doing?" And I think they like to kind of spread the love around a little bit in terms of they didn't just want people from BBC One and BBC Two; they wanted some people from Channel Four to come over and do that.
Sky TV get invited? No,
no,
didn't think so.
They're not desperate.
Does the royal family actually have a lot of money, or is it just their
holdings?
Provided for by the state.
Incredibly wealthy. There's a theory that they're one of the owners of the Federal Reserve. That's one of the theories. Because no one knows who owns the Federal Reserve of America.
Chinese.
I mean, I'm not sure where China was in 1933 or whenever it was set up.
But. In China.
You're giving me a look now that's inscrutable to the point that I think it's borderline racist.
Maybe a little bit.
That's insane. I didn't, because I don't.
But they're a phenomenally wealthy family. They kept hold of their money.
Isn't like
well.
Them? They and the Vatican are the two wealthiest landowners.
Yeah, the Vatican's the really interesting one because people think the Roman Empire fell. It didn't. It just rebranded.
Yes.
The Roman Empire just
rebranding.
Went, yeah, nation states, thing of the past. Church, that's where you want to be.
Put on this dumb hat.
That's the truth, though. That's absolutely the truth.
Absolutely just rebranded.
And also,
I've been trying to get J.J. Abrams to reboot Catholicism. I think it needs it.
It could use a separate timeline.
Yeah.
But you don't buy. You don't actually buy property in England, right? You essentially lease it from the royal family or the government.
You can buy property in the UK, and there's a lot of leasehold property as well, which is where someone owns the land and you rent it for like 1,000 years or 100 years, and then it goes back to the Crown Estates. But those are very specific bits of property that they own. It's a weird, archaic system. It's almost like we're older than you are.
A lot. Well, that's why, you know...
Well, I don't understand. We go back as far as sometimes as the 1950s.
Yeah. There's a part of Los Angeles that dates back to 1924.
Bullshit.
It's true. There's a little adobes.
That go back to my house is older than that.
Or imagine yours is. You really got a lot of money. But can you make...
More than he should. Thanks, tax loophole.
No, but your tax. But what's the tax situation in England now? What are the tax rates? Is it?
I'm not
asking the wrong guy. Asking the wrong guy.
Chris,
but you're on the right
Chris,
side of this.
What? Don't do it.
No, Jonah, this will be fine.
Stop, Chris. This is like, thing.
You know what? Good that he works it out on me before you get Wesley on the show.
What
is the situation now?
Is he out of jail?
Wesley Snipes. Yeah, he did get out of jail.
Nice. Yeah, is he going to be in the Expendables 3? I hope.
Oh shit, that'd be great. They should
I'm
do
super
another
looking
Blade.
Forward to, yeah, Blade 5.
They should
Blade
do they should do five? Another Blade.
They should four. Make a 4 before they do that.
Just skip it. Jonah, they'll just skip it. They'll just skip it.
You didn't see Blade 4?
It was awesome. How did you not see Blade 4?
Blade 4 is the prison one.
What?
No.
Chad, shut up.
Chad. We interviewed Chad before you got here, so this is your fault.
That's why he's very comfortable. Chad's very comfortable just shouting things out because we brought him up here, so we created this mess.
It's true.
I think Blade would be great.
You think Blade would be great?
I think another Blade would be great.
Major League 4 would be really good.
Already did. It's called Back to the Miners starring Scott Bakula.
That was three.
Is Scott Bakula in the balcony? Because you keep on doing that.
No, he's in heaven.
I don't think he went to heaven.
NBC Heaven with the... No, he's in NBC Heaven with the Golden Girls.
He was just in a movie.
So wait, the Golden Girls are dead?
Except Most B. Arthur.
No, B. Arthur's dead.
Oh, yeah, fuck.
She's not alive.
I better...
Betty White's still alive. She's the only
really,
Golden
Girl. Really, who had money on Betty White?
Yeah, no, seriously, who had money on Betty White being
the oldest
one?
Incredible. Wow, and that death pool you made out like a bandit.
My money was on Rue. She didn't make it.
There was one more thing.
Yeah.
What are you looking up at?
Someone just went, this is terrible.
I'm looking
this
up is, at Rue
It's all very well ahead. Doing Holocaust jokes, but the girls and the goals.
Are the Golden Girls like a national treasure here? Because they're American. They live in Miami.
They live in fake Miami. They didn't really
no,
live.
I've so been to Disney
Canadians.
World. Yeah.
I find, I was actually surprised the early show last night. Well, I find the early shows that you do here are like 60% white hairs in the audience, and usually I've struggled with that.
Is that like a brown coat? What the fuck's a white hair?
No, like people over 60, like they're elderly people in the audience. Oh. But they were actually a pretty good audience last night.
That's a weird thing. I think it's just that comedy savvy. They've been to see shows the last 30 years. Comedy Laughs, Just for Laughs has been going. I think they've gone to see stuff. They've gone to see galas, and they're kind of into it. If they've made it to that show, they've probably booked tickets way in advance, and that's what they're into. That's their night out. It's like this town is such a weird thing because people come out and like a guy today, like the guy that runs Dairy Queen opposite the Hyatt. My money is no good there. I do not have to pay for blizzards. I went and made my own blizzard.
They let you behind?
Because Doug, that runs the Dairy Queen, is a huge fan. He comes to see all the nasty shows, came to see my solo show. But he's a guy, I mean, he's got to be... He's 65 and I'm being generous. He's going to be dead any day now. Because, I mean, he's living on blizzards. He thinks
can
that's
I give? Yeah, can yeah, I yeah. give him a message for Scott Bakula?
Has anyone done that? I think where you give messages to people that are about to go for the other side. Yeah. Be a really creepy medium that goes, listen, I know you haven't got a long left, but can you ask Elvis what he thinks about today's music?
Well, how many shows do you have? Are you done at the festival?
No, like four or five. I've got like a gala with Sarah Silverman, which I'm kind of super excited about. You know, just that thing of kind of, you know, those galas you're on with like 10 other comics that you just know everyone's going to kill, and it'll be a really fun sort of thing.
It must be fun for you because you've made friends with a lot of comics that you probably don't get to see a lot when the festival's not going on.
It feels a bit like you're kind of on a school trip. Everyone's kind of together and, oh, what are we doing? Oh, brilliant, ice cream. I'll get these. I'll get these.
How many blizzards? Oh, he's dead.
Oh. What, oh, more? Man.
Thank
more
you.
More sparkling water?
Was my hand shaking? Why'd you bring me another booze drink?
Is there, how long are we going on for? Are we doing this?
I think 74 more minutes.
We're about to wrap it up in a second.
Okay, no, I like this.
I thought the DQ callback was a pretty good place to end it.
Did you want
to...
What? If only we could go back in time. Sam, you got to stop the show at one.
I want to catch the last maybe half an hour of Dave Chappelle.
Well, then you should show up next Tuesday when he's wrapping up that show.
I'll see you next Tuesday.
Day! Oh, that's the perfect place to end the show. Dad!
Okay,
perfect callback. Jonah wrapped it up.
Look how upset Matt is.
I said it first.
Okay, Matt, we'll give you the credit for it. Matt said it first.
Doesn't matter.
Sort of about delivery as well, though, isn't it, Matt?
Yeah, you know, I'm just going to go see Doug at Dairy Queen.
Yeah, he's awesome.
He charges me, though.
You need to go.
He charges you double. He doesn't want you there.
Well, no, he just anticipates I'll order double. What a human being.
Yeah, I think he maybe made a decision when he saw me to go, free ice cream for this guy? Okay. I think he's probably a big fan of the show, but eh.
Yeah, I understand. He knows.
They got to be practical.
They got to make money. It's Canada.
So you're Jimmy...
Your money smells like maple syrup. Can we talk about that? What the fuck?
Well, not the plastic money. Like the... like.
Yes, the plastic money smells like maple syrup.
Oh, it really does.
Chris.
Are they...
I know you're kind of a germaphobe. You just put money to your face.
How are they training their strippers? Is that how they... Is that how that's... I don't think that's... No, that one's been where it shouldn't be, yeah. That one's tipped someone at the pussy core.
We were talking about the pussy core earlier.
Talking about it, I've enlisted.
What?
Ask not what the pussy core can do for you. Ask what you can do for the pussy core, and then ask them to return the favor.
That is actually the first draft of that Kennedy speech.
Yeah.
Ask her.
I said, John, let's take it back.
Someone told me that Kennedy never lasted more than 3 minutes. Like, he was super quick.
Well, he had to get stuff done.
Yeah, it's like, you know, Cuban Missile Crisis and
he
whatnot.
He had a country to run.
Shit to do.
He had more women to fuck.
Cool.
God bless Kennedy. Say hi to Scott Bakula.
Jimmy Carr, you are on Twitter as at Jimmy Carr with two R's at the end.
I don't Twitter that much anymore.
You know, did you get bored of it?
I didn't get bored of it. I got bored of like it being a newspaper story when you tweeted a thing. If you like every time you tweeted something, they would just go, okay, well, we're gonna take
yeah, we then, get we get that. Yeah, it's
is
like
that
us.
Is that does that take fun out of it? Does it make you like
it
the fact
you
that you can't
guess.
Be as exactly, and that is deadly for comedy in a way, right?
Yeah, and you kind of go, oh, if I say that, will people read it in the wrong way? And then you get like quite a lot of messages back from people going that don't get the joke.
Right,
you say something ridiculous. We had a thing on when I first started on Twitter. It was quite a while ago. It's, you know, 3-4 years or whatever when it kind of first kind of came to the fore. And we had a thing called Uninventions, where I would just go Uninventions. I've invented a device for seeing through walls. It's made of glass. It's pretty cool. Things can be popular. And you would uninvent shit kind of backwards. And I got loads of messages from people going, "Well, it already exists."
Whoosh.
No
just
matter
a weird
how.
Kind of, what? Why did we clearly?
And then you kind of go, why did you follow me? Did you not have any idea what I was about before?
I don't believe the followers either. I've got a lot of followers, but I think they're all robots. I think there's 20 people following me, and there are a lot of spam people going, must have more people. Oh, you know, whatever.
Yeah. And they're the ones that don't. That's why they take everything literally. And they're like, this device already exists.
Twitter took me out to dinner.
Wait, RoboCop follows him?
Yep.
Twitter took us out to dinner. There's about 10 of us in the UK that had like more than 3 million followers. And they took us to dinner. They said, do you want to come to dinner? It was like the Prime Minister's wife and Stephen Fry and Graham Linehan, a bunch of people, and Richard Bacon, people that were big kind of early adopters of Twitter. Yeah. And they took us out to dinner. And I thought what they were going to do is say, listen, guys, we're going to give you shares in the company because you're so important to us. And they went, any notes, anything we could do better? Enjoy your dinner. Bye. We're all billionaires.
What just happened? Yeah. And then you're all just kind of looking at each other.
It was fun, though. It was like a fun thing. But they
did you give them any suggestions?
Literally nothing. Literally nothing. I said, you shouldn't be able to block people. People should be able to talk shit.
Oh, you like that? You're like,
I don't mind a bit of talking shit. Fine. Just ignore it.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Other than this guy. Get this guy out.
Chad.
Sad Chad.
Chad, you're so such a shitty person. You shut up, Chad.
Jonah, stop it.
What did Chad do? Do we find out anything about Chad? I would ask him, but I don't want to engage him.
Chad's in real estate, okay?
In Vermont.
In real estate in Vermont? Just say unemployed. Don't dress it up. Hey, want to buy 5,000 acres? No.
People from Jersey apparently buy a lot of land in Vermont and they never develop it. Chad talked about it earlier.
Things were pretty rough before I arrived, right? Jeez, the good thing I left that show when I did. I mean, I feel bad about being late, but thank God I fucking came.
Yeah.
No, we were going like, around the room. Everyone was having a share.
Oh, my God.
And it was all fun.
You were next.
What do you do for a living, man? I'm trying to be a stand-up comic. You're trying to be a stand-up comic?
Is that why you wanted to be next?
This podcast changed your life.
I'm sorry. Let me just make sure
we do that a lot, Jimmy. Don't worry about it.
I'm sorry, sir. I'm just picking a person at random. What was it that you were wanting to say?
The Nerdist podcast changed my life.
This is such a surprise. I don't even know what to say.
Chris, can I just stop you there for a second?
Sure.
That guy was probably a doctor. I believe he was working on children's hearts.
Okay.
He was a whisker away from a cure for leukemia, and your podcast changed his life. It turned it around.
That's right.
He's now a bum.
You need to follow your passions. What were you doing before?
I worked in aerospace.
Okay.
Were you supposed to fix that Asiana Air thing? Because that got fucked.
Are we all comfortable with that euphemism? I work in aerospace means I make bombs, right? You work in the arms industry,
but defense. That's
because there's a lot of guys in Montreal that say, "Oh yeah, I work in aerospace." What do you make? Mainly missiles.
What did you make?
I actually did mostly sales and distribution for technical manuals for private aircraft, but it sounds cooler.
How did you get out of that without falling asleep?
Yeah, the first part's cooler. You are making the right choice by going into comedy.
Sorry, you can buy a private jet and then it comes with a manual.
So you were just...
You buy like a Learjet and it comes with a... I'll flick through this, love. We'll be off in a minute.
So what you're telling us is you were just selling books to Harrison Ford.
Yeah. He can't afford our planes.
Whoa! Big spender.
When you say our planes, you'll know a stand-up.
I mean,
relax.
Their planes. Yeah. Yeah.
Which side is the gas tank on? I always forget every time. I don't get the thing. Have you started doing stand-up yet?
Yeah, I've been doing stand-up for about a year and a half.
How's it going?
So far, so good.
Where are you performing?
In this building twice a week.
Are you serious? This is your home club that we're in right now?
I co-run the open mic here on Tuesdays.
Fantastic.
Hey,
well,
I'll give you a piece of advice, man, as a comic starting out. Read the Bible for 4 hours a day. Chris, it won't stop him, but it'll slow him down. I don't need the competition.
Thanks, man. What is your name?
Jason.
Jason, thank you so much. It's nice to meet you. And
good job, Jason.
I think that's a good place to kind of wrap it up and release you guys back into the wild. It's very dangerous out there right now. So I would recommend just as I think the entire audience should just move as a unit all the way down and sort of create flanks like the Spartans.
Scott Bakula's coming for me.
Hey, guys, don't forget to check out our after party. I am DJing across the street at Pussy Corpse.
And I'm putting on a show.
Thanks so much for coming out. Enjoy your burrito. Jimmy Carr, Jonah Ray, Matt Myra, me, Chris Hardwick, and Scott Bakula, wherever you are.
It all started when a time travel experiment I was conducting went a little caca. In the blink of a cosmic clock, I went from quantum physicist to Air Force test pilot, which could have been fun if I knew how to fly. Fortunately, I had help, an observer from the project named Al. Unfortunately, Al's a hologram, so all he can lend is moral support. Anyway, here I am, bouncing around in time, putting things right that once went wrong, a sort of time-traveling Lone Ranger with Al as my Tonto. And I don't even need a mask. Oh, boy.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Behind every successful business is a story, and some of them might surprise you. Like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail. Or how the founder of the multi-million dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. I'm Guy Raz, and on my show How I Built This, I talk to founders behind the world's biggest companies and brands to learn the real stories of how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt and failure and talk about how they were able to overcome them on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity, a how-to guide for navigating life's challenges from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.